You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the Fans First Sports Network. I'm Brett Rutherford, joined, as always, by Darby Robinson. Darby, it's always a great time when the Rays beat the Yankees, and they continue playing some really good baseball, taking 2 of 3 from the Bronx Bombers, or as they used to be called. Now they're just sitting in last place. At Tropicana Field, things got a little feisty in Sunday afternoon's game. But ultimately, the Rays move on. They continue in the playoff hunt. The Yankees, floundering, have little to no hope remaining this season. But the Rays are only 2.5 games out of first place now, still very much in the hunt for the AL East title, chasing down the Baltimore Orioles. How are we feeling?
It's always good to come away from a Yankee series on top with the Yankees team trying their best to chirp and yap and try to start something and fail miserably at it as the Rays take the high road and take the wins, which matter more than anything else. So it's just nice to see like a lot of salty, you know, Yankees fans on Twitter, and the team itself just like seemingly floundering, and the Rays just being a rising above what is, you know, just your classic last place team that's frustrated, that's rudderless, that's taking out all of that on a division rival, and knowing that like if there's a fight, if there's a Jose Ramirez knocking out Tim Anderson type of thing, if Yandy Diaz Cole Cox, Ian Hamilton, and sends Ian Hamilton into the shadow realm, that's fine. The Yankees might win a game or two that Hamilton would have blown, but Yandy would be out for, you know, 2 weeks potentially. And that's a huge blow to the Rays. So it's really hard. And I'm very glad to be done facing the Yankees this year. They're a team that, not that they're a good team this year, they're not. The Rays were able to handle them. They're able to handle Aaron Judge. He went hitless in the series. They were able to handle the baseball part really well. But there's always this, the last couple years under the Boone Yankees, there's been this headhunting through either incompetence or malice that you just don't want to deal with. And we saw Yandy Diaz take a bad hit by pitch the next time he was at bat after hitting a home run in game one. And he missed the next two games. That would have been really helpful to have him. The Rays still won, but like he is a, you know, he is the integrity. He is the MVP of this team this year for sure. And that you can't risk, you know, losing him or losing Randy or losing Isak Paredes, who had a ball hit off of his helmet in his head. So it's just, I'm glad to be done with the Yankees. They won the season series. They got 2 out of 3, and now they don't have to deal with this team until April.
Yeah, because clearly Yankees sitting at 62-68. FanGraphs gives them a 0.1% chance of making the postseason. I want to talk a little bit about the Yankees because the last few years, it's been the Rays and the Yankees battling out for the AL East. The Yankees got it last year. The Rays got it 2 years prior. And it's been a fun battle, I think, between those two teams that at times has gone a little over the edge, specifically back in that 2020 series and then again in the postseason. But yeah, the Yankees are in a really interesting spot. They've got clearly one of the best players, probably top five players in the entire game in Aaron Judge, who had an historic season last year and has played pretty well when he's been healthy this year, but he hasn't stayed consistently healthy like at all in his career besides last season when he hit, you know, 62 home runs and broke the American League record. Where do the Yankees go from here? I mean, is this it for Aaron Boone? Is this potentially it for Brian Cashman, who's been there for 25 odd years as the GM?
I'm kind of curious to see what they do. They have not been a very they have not been very reactive, and they haven't really even been that proactive either, which has been odd. They've sort of been very steady, stay the course. The Steinbrenner brothers have been very much in the they've spent their money. They don't want to go after huge big name guys. They can go after sort of the mid-range expensive like Carlos Rodon, but like the Judge extension was like their big move of last offseason, and they kind of the last few years have stared away from being the big spenders. They have not been the Steve Cohen spending spree. They have been very much wanting to stay under that luxury tax. So I don't know if they, like the Steinbrenners, think that Cashman and, you know, Boone are doing a bad job, or if they just got bad luck this year with injuries. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think there was still some big warning flags that I think we talked about in the offseason with the Yankees. Like that rotation was really good. Top four was really good, but you had a question mark at number five and you had no depth below that. And that's a big issue, especially when you have like Carlos Rodon as one of those guys who's had like a ton of injuries in his career. So I don't know. It's a tricky thing. They've seen, you know, Nestor Cortez, who again, he's been injured, but like you also could say you're banking on a lot of, or no regression basically happening from Nestor Cortez. And he's been good when healthy, but again, he's been hurt. You also are looking at like, you need Giancarlo Stanton healthy. The man is clearly like, he can't run anymore. Or if he does try to run there, it could potentially explode his quads and knees. He'll be like Kevin Hart, just like, you know, his entire lower body exploding, trying to run. And I mean, they are in a certain spot. Like, you know, Aaron Judge is an amazing player. He is a joy to watch, extremely likable guy, too. I mean, everybody likes Aaron Judge. Like, he is anything you can say about the Yankees, especially regardless to their fans. Aaron Judge is above all that. He is a truly like top tier guy, but he's also getting older and he is a big body. And we have seen that like it can sometimes be tough to keep physical like excellence at that size year after year after year, especially needing, you know, him to basically carry the weight of that team. So it seems like they're going younger. They have a lot of young talent. They've kind of unleash all the kids. So they're not in a rebuild, but like they didn't sign shortstops or trade for shortstops because of Volpe. They have not kind of gone after outfielders because of they had like Jason Dominguez and Pereira and guys that they want to like take those roles. So it'll be interesting to see, like, how far the Yankees go next year is going to be on the health of some of these older players and vets, and the emergence of some of these young players, which is a different situation for the Yankees to be in. And I'm very curious to see if Boone keeps his job. I do think my whole thing with managers is I think most fans way overvalue how much impact a manager has on their team. I think the vast majority of managers have a negligible impact. I think some have, a very strong positive impact. Mm-hmm. And I think some have a very strong negative impact. And I do think Aaron Boone is in the very strong negative impact. I think it's not for any of the reasons any Yankee fan thinks, but I do think Aaron Boone, the comments that you heard coming out of this locker room after they just lost another series and have hit the Rays 12 times to the Rays retaliating twice, and then seeing them like be like, yeah, I can't wait to face, like, I wish I had another game against them to face. The reliever who got lit up for four runs and hung the L on the deciding game is talking smack in the locker room after you just dropped to six games below 500. That is a testament to Aaron Boone just not having any control over this locker.
And the guy, like, you know, okay, if you didn't hit our player intentionally, then you just have terrible commands of your fastball. Like, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. They hit 12 Rays this year. That's either, again, in less games or malice. Like,
they're playing less games against each other now, too.
It's one of those things where it's like, I think Brian Cashman is a good GM that was handed a tough hand by stingier ownership. It's a much more money than a lot of teams get, but it's still a lot less than the Yankees normally get. Mm-hmm. I also think he's taken some, I think it's very fair to say that Brian Cashman deserves quite a bit of blame for what's going on, because I think he took some poor risks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Giancarlo Stanton like contract was a great move at the time, but you do know that like it's a move that you know is going to age poorly. Right. And it's now aging poorly, but like you can cover that up. You can absorb that money. Carlos Rodon, it was a big risk, but he is a guy that has had a ton of injuries, but he's a very good pitcher. All these things though, is I look at it, it's like, okay, where's the backup behind all these things? That's where the Rays, getting back to the Rays, that's where the Rays have been able to withstand one of the worst injury filled seasons. Like the Yankees are going to talk about how they got riddled with injuries. Boo freaking who? The Rays lost three pitchers better than any pitcher the Yankees lost. You can argue with Carlos Rodon, but like whatever. That's like three potential Cy Young candidates that the Rays lost and have not missed a beat pitching. It's because they have depth. You build out that depth. And the Yankees have no excuse not to be able to build out competent depth throughout the minor leagues, throughout the major leagues, to have veterans that can like fill roles. It's absolutely deserves some blame on Cashman's feet and Boone's feet. I think they probably are getting too much heat from the New York media, but I don't think they are blameless in all this.
Yeah. And I just look at the Yankees and two very clear superstars, right? Judge and Cole are two of the best players in Major League Baseball. And
top five in their positions, for sure.
And I don't see that. Like, I know Judge is a little older for when he hit free agency because of when he was brought up and everything. Like, I see that contract being mostly a win. And you do get the factor where he is their captain. And then it's like the last couple of years, it's been kind of pieced together. You bring in guys, like, you just look at the guys that have been on their roster.
Josh Donaldson,
right? Like, Anthony Rizzo, I know he's hurt right now too, and dealing with a lot of stuff this season. Another maybe mismanagement with his
concussion. Yeah, I mean that's the other thing too, is I think we have to like mention, like, Anthony Rizzo had a really great start to the season. He then got concussed. He then went on a 2-month cold streak since the point of concussion. They've now basically said that it was like kind of post-concussion syndrome. I mean, their post-concussion symptoms. I don't know what's going on there. That Domingo Herman has to be removed from the team because he's in a drunken, you know, like fit in the locker room. And then they, according to the, they like told this to the press that they locked him in the sauna to kind of keep him, to have him like sweat off the alcohol, which is medically could have sent him into cardiac arrest. You do not raise the temperature of somebody who is like absolute blackout drunk. Like he was that like, so what is happening in terms of not seeing symptoms from Rizzo? Is anybody feel comfortable talking to anybody? Like this is that whole culture of like holistic management, right? That you look at the Rays and people think that the Rays are this cold, calculating machine that just basically sees, you know, numbers and bloops instead of actual humans. But instead you have like Kyle Snyder calling guys, talking to people in the offseason, like actually like investing in who they are as human beings, so that if somebody is potentially hurt or not feeling right, they can actually speak up about it. So I don't know what's going on in the Yankees clubhouse, but this year you've seen two horrific bits of like, why is Anthony Rizzo playing for 2 months and being terrible, but all because he's suffering? And yeah. Domingo Germán has had his demons in the past, but like, what is happening? What is going on there? And it's not been transparent with the media there. So like there is some weird stuff that makes me thankful that the Rays are not run like that.
Yeah, for sure. And luckily we're done with them this season. Don't have to worry about that. Although the last thing I'll say about the kerfluffle from the weekend was when Jose Siri was running onto the field towards Abreu. I did not think he was going out there to defuse the situation, but I'll give him credit, right?
Good, calm. Yeah. Siri just breaking it up.
And the man Brandon Lau wins for best post game comments. Kevin Cash took the more mild mannered route, which I thought he also did a good job with that. Maybe he just didn't want to be suspended for a game without pay. Like that's the thing with we talk about like these players, they don't mind being suspended, like they're multimillionaires. Well, Kevin Cash does very, very well for himself, I'm sure. Like, I don't know, maybe I just don't want to take a game's worth of pay away.
The family really wants to do that Italy vacation in this off season, and all the resort costs a lot of money, so
all I have to do is not say anything mean about the Yankees or the umpires.
A team that, I mean, yeah, it's some trying patience this last series with umpires and strike zones, and Kevin Cash is a bigger man than I. Let's just say that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's move on and talk about where the Rays are headed now. The rest of the season, let's just jump over to the other team, the American League East, that the Rays are trying to chase. Not that they're looking down on the Baltimore Orioles, who. Like, I'm sorry, I feel bad for Felix Bautista, but everyone saw this coming. Like, they literally wrote him until his arm fell off. We noticed it in that series against the Rays, where the Orioles, I can't even say to their credit, like, they were going after it, like, it was the World Series. And they've jumped ahead of the Rays in the schedule now, but they're now without one of their most valuable pieces, and that is the guy who was the best closer of baseball, Felix Bautista. UCL injury. I don't believe there's been a determination whether or not he'll get surgery. It's not looking good for the big man, though.
Was it confirmed that he's done for the year?
It's one of those where it's like highly unlikely, like similar to the Shane McClanahan diagnosis that we got early on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, it seems, I think we can all say he's done for the year without it being confirmed, but I wasn't sure if they had finally made that decision. No, I mean, it does suck. Like, he is a absolutely incredible, incredible closer. Like, just absolutely one of the most dominant. He had a potential Cy Young, like, again, if Ohtani doesn't exist as a human, like Felix Bautista might have a Cy Young like candidacy as a closer, which is very hard to do. But the Baltimore was, it was, they are a team, Baltimore this year, which has been kind of middle of the road on offense, middle of the road in a lot of stats, you know, top 10 maybe in some, but like lower half, not a standout in any really regard, except for really good in close games. Like those one or two run games, they have just won again and again and again. And it's because of kind of the two-headed monster of Yennier Cano and Felix Bautista. And they have needed Bautista to close out so many games because he is basically when the Baltimore Orioles are winning, it's usually close and it's usually Bautista finishing the job. And oftentimes he's been getting these multi-inning saves down the stretch. So it's a tough strategy because we were all talking about it like, is he going to be able to survive this year? Like, and a lot of it was like, okay, maybe he survives the regular season, but like, you now have another full month in October and every game is close. Every game is tough. Like you are basically in only high intensity moment. So I know a lot of people really get upset with the way Kevin Cash manages a bullpen sometimes. There's been a few occasions when somebody has taken in, you know, like the contrarian view to how Kevin Cash has chosen to use the bullpen. For instance, the game one against the Yankees, Gerrit Cole, it was 2-1. Trevor Kelly was just brought back up. There was a bullpen day the very night before. So you had Pete Fairbanks, you had Jason Adam, you had guys that you came back to win against the Colorado Rockies who had just gone, and they had gone twice in that previous series, just in that same week, they were not available. Mm-hmm. So you call up a fresh arm. He's not one of your 3, 4, 5, 6 best relievers. And there's some bad luck with not calling strike threes and calling strike threes when they're not there, and he blew the game. But guess what? You can't necessarily win every single game, and so you chase that one. It's 2-1. If you lose and you burn Pete Fairbanks, then he's not there for game two. He's not there for game three, and God forbid, like Felix Bautista, now he is not there for the rest of the year potentially. And can Baltimore hold on for another month from the Rays, perhaps, but can they do that and go through October? That's tough. That is really, really tough.
Yeah, and they still have a really solid bullpen, Cano, and I think Fujinami is going to come up big for them. And
that's become maybe the biggest and most important trade of the deadline, because you had Fujinami and Aaron Civale very soon after became like, if you don't make that trade, those two teams are in serious trouble.
Yeah, like he's immediately like raised his strikeouts, cut down on his walks. It was a trade like when it happened, I was like, damn it, why couldn't the Rays?
I love that like, trade, yeah.
It felt like for the first time in a while, I mean, this happens all the time, but like with a division rival, maybe the Yankees have pulled off a couple moves like this with pitchers, but it's like they just beat us to the punch. Like, you think somewhere in that Rays trading war room, somewhere in that front office, like Fujinami was a name that had been discussed, and Baltimore just beat you to it, and it was a good addition to their bullpen. Tough news for Baltimore. But again, you know, there goes just another elite pitcher down with a UCL injury, Shohei Ohtani being the other one. Maybe he's down for a 1 year deal with the Rays as a DH next year, or maybe as probably not an outfielder if he does get surgery.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We'll keep it focused on the Rays, who have a road trip this week, which is probably a good thing, given that Hurricane or still Tropical Storm Idalia is closing in on Florida. Still a lot of uncertainty on where it's going to end up landing, but they're in Miami for a two-game set, the Citrus Series. They get 2 days off today, Monday, the day we're recording, and then again on Thursday. Then they travel to Cleveland, so should be a good opportunity again to continue the rest, to rest the starting pitching. The plan right now, I believe, is Savale Tuesday, Eflin on Wednesday, Glasnow and Littell on Friday, Saturday, and then Savale should be good to go again by Sunday, but they might use a bullpen day and just keep these guys rested. Because, I don't know, like right now, I think if you're the Rays, I think the way Kevin Cash manages is he's good at, yes, like clearly there's pressure to catch up to the Orioles. But you can also only control what you can control. And the Rays are playing really good baseball right now. And right now, you just hope that Baltimore doesn't stay as hot as they've been for most of the second half of the season. And
all you can do.
At the rate you're – like, you don't need to go out there and force, like, okay, Savala, you're not going to get your extra day of rest because we need you to pitch this game so that you can pitch again next year. Like, I think the Rays are very much comfortable going into this week where – I think you'd want to win four out of these five games. That's a, you know, a lofty goal, but a definitely attainable one. But maybe you get to Sunday and you're like, listen, we've still got Erasmo who hasn't pitched all week. It's a getaway day. You got to play again on Monday. Like, you just kind of pump that one with the bullpen. And I like that about the Rays, just because, again, you're prioritizing who's going to be ready come October. And when you're already down as many guys as you are, you really want to protect the ones that you've got. I'm looking forward to this week, and I think it's another opportunity for the Rays to continue gaining ground. I know Miami's decent. Cleveland is always going to put up a fight, but should be some winnable games, even though they're on the road. Hopefully, I guess everyone who's listening that could be potentially impacted by the storm, please stay safe and listen to mandatory evacuation orders, because once that storm starts, there's no coming to get you. So please be safe, everyone. All right, where are we going next, Darby?
So I think what is really interesting is this next series against Miami. We have an off day. When the Cleveland series starts, September 1st.
Oh, yeah.
Which means rosters expand, which means the Rays get two extra players on that roster, which is really important. Topkin has said that September 5th, which is against Boston, if you look at the schedule here, is the date slated for Taj Bradley's return to the major. So he probably has one more Durham start. He's scaling up his innings. Been looking pretty good. The last four starts have been really impressive. He's starting to like get into a groove again. So that's good. So he'll be back up. Seemingly, I would imagine, kind of into the rotation for the stretch run. There's some interesting ideas of like what – I actually don't know what the Rays will do there. You could see Mead back up. You could see
– It also sounds like Taylor Walls will be ready to go by Friday.
Walls, yeah. That's the big thing is if he can get healthy, I think Walls comes back and probably replaces Vidal Brujan, who we know has an extra option, thanks to Mark Topkin, his last option. There seems to be some like little reinforcements. Could be also an opportunity to add like Colby White, maybe, who's been rehabbing and starting to build up. Could be an option to add, it's one of those things where you could see a Cole Sulzer kind of get a call up, add an extra arm. It's some moving and shaking. Anytime there's like a hard and fast date where the Rays will be adding something, you know, when it's like Rule 5 deadlines or the trade deadline or any of these things where you're like, okay, something's going to have to happen. So I'm always, you know, a little intrigued, always a little bit like, ooh, what's going to happen? And so that's the mystery box coming after this Miami series is – could be Walls and Taj Bradley. I think those guys are coming back soon. But then, what's the roster shakeout? Who's sticking? Who's keeping? But yeah, something to look forward to as we get closer to the end of the week.
So are you pretty confident in saying that you think Oslavis Basabe will be sticking around even with the addition of Taylor Walls?
Yes, I do. At this point in the season, I do. Just looking at the playing time, Basabe's starting. He's hitting higher up in the lineup. Like I think Brujan, even at this point, is still not like he is the utility guy. He is the backup. He is the emergency guy. He is not the guy that the Rays do not feel comfortable having him be the guy that they are penciling in when there's another option available.
Yeah.
So I think that to me says that Basabe sticks around. I think Walls will get a lot of playing time. I don't think Basabe has like a starting, you know, 6 out of 7 games type of job, but I do think you could see a little timeshare there. I think you could even see some more rest for Paredes and Brandon Lau and Yandy. So I think you can do some things with both Basabe and Walls where you can have Walls and Basabe on the left side of the infield. And, you know, Paredes either gets a rest or he's at first and Yandy gets a rest, or you could see some guys being put into the DH. I think the Rays will get, once September comes around, that's like a really good month for the Rays to be able to get really flexible with it. Lots of pinch hitting, lots of pinch running, lots of defensive replacements, you know, cycling through and getting rest, either full game or half game rest is just an important thing that the Rays always tend to do in September leading into October.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited. I'm excited to see how they play with the roster this last year. One last thing I wanted to touch before we get to, I guess, what we'll call our Raise Your Voice segment for this week. Yandy Diaz is leading the American League in batting average. He is 12 points ahead of Bo Bichette. So at this point in the season, that's a pretty good cushion to have. Mm-hmm. And Bo Bichette just coming off of injury, so not sure where he's going to be. But he's also on pace to break the Rays' single-season batting average record, which is currently Jason Bartlett's 320 batting average from the 2009 season. So 6 points ahead of that is Yandy Diaz right now. If he keeps that pace, he'll go into the Rays record books. And I just wanted to use this as an opportunity to just say how grateful I believe we both are for Yandy Diaz and his contributions in the lineup. But maybe overshadowed for team MVP by his other corner infield teammate, Isak Paredes, who just continues to mash and just pull every single baseball.
I think just kudos to both of those two guys. Like they have both like been absolute perfect. Like they have been involved in like most good Rays like offense all year. You know, you've seen guys like Randy kind of slump and Brandon Lau slump. Yandy and Paredes have been like fairly consistent all throughout the year and been like that, you know, like steady place. And similar and different batters, too. Like they both have really good, makes it hard on the pitcher with their eye. Paredes, it's all lift. It's all pull. Everything is pull. And he hits a lot of home runs. Yandy, he gets his own home runs this year. He's been doing pretty well. He's up to what, 17 on the year.
Yeah.
Pretty good, but it's much more all over the field. It's peppering everything. And, I think Yandy Diaz is starting to get more and more noticed, rightfully so, as one of the truly great hitters in baseball.
Yeah.
Like just truly impressive elite hitters, because he does not strike out very easily. If he's called, if it's a strikeout looking, it's wrong and the umpire is wrong, and Yandy will usually give him a look. He won't say that was a ball. He'll give him a look that says, do better. Do better. That was definitely a ball. When baseball eventually does the tap where they do the review, Yanni's going to be 100%. He's going to be 100%. He is going to have like a perfect record for like 3 seasons in a row, because he knows that strike zone so, so well. And it's been so impressive to see him evolve as a hitter on the Rays because he's always been like a pesky hitter, like a really good hitter, an underrated hitter. Now this year, it feels like he is finally like emerged as like, yeah, this guy is like legit amazing.
And not only leads the American League in batting average, he's second in WRC plus behind only Shohei Ohtani, which I think you can just count as like de facto first place. Like Ohtani gets his own category.
First place amongst mortals. Yeah.
The Rays on the other hand have four of the top 10 qualified hitters in WRC plus in the American League. Yandy at 158, Paredes at 143, Rosarena at 129, and Wander Franco still at 127, still a qualified hitter. So it's been a great year for Rays hitters all around. Darby, to end the show today, so we were watching this past Saturday as the Rays inducted their third and final member of the inaugural Rays Hall of Fame class, and that was Carl Crawford. And this one hit me a little different than maybe Boggs or Zimmer. I'm a little too young to remember Boggs' time with the team. And Zimmer, I have some great memories, you know, meeting him at the ballpark a few times as a kid. But again, just different because he wasn't a player with the team. Seeing Carl Crawford get inducted was really special for me. He was like my first, like the first star that I got to witness playing for the then Devil Rays and then the Rays. And so seeing some of those highlights replayed, seeing some of his former teammates that sent in videos, seeing a guy like BJ Upton there in attendance, man, that was just really cool. To see Carl Crawford, and his son was there, who's now a prospect going up in, I want to say, the Red Sox organization?
Phillies
organization. Yeah. And so one just now made me start to feel a little old, right? But really cool to see Carl Crawford inducted. And it got me thinking, we could obviously go through a list of guys that we think should be in the Hall of Fame eventually. But with the Rays having inducted three this year in their inaugural class, Boggs, Zimmer, and Crawford, I'm going to assume that the plan is next year, and we don't know this, that they are going to induct three more. And so I think the more interesting discussion is not only like who belongs in the Hall of Fame, because that's a long list and up for debate based on the type of Hall of Fame you want the Rays to have. But I think the important question is, all right, who's next? So I know you and I off air bounced some names around, but I think we've got a few good ideas. Brian Ald, Matt Silverman, whoever makes those decisions. If you're listening, I'm sure you have thought long and hard about this, but take our advice. So I'll go ahead and start. One name that for me, without a doubt, deserves to be in as soon as possible, and it's unfortunate that this would happen posthumously. But the late, great Dave Wills. You just think about, and there are a few other broadcasters that I hopefully, you know, when they're retired and they're enjoying their retirement, can come back to the Trop for their induction that are currently still working for the team. But Dave Wills was the voice of so many great Rays moments, and it was just one of the voices of the Rays and was with the organization for a long, long time, built such a great relationship with his broadcast partner, Andy Freed. And I think like that's a, without a doubt, he should be in, if not next year, then very, very soon after.
I think he's a automatic. Yeah, absolutely automatic. And I think next year just makes all the sense in the world. Why not? Just, you know, this was a season sort of dedicated to him. The patch is there. And I think, I think that's just such a, I think it's, he deserves to be in, obviously. Yeah, unfortunately this time it's posthumously, but absolutely going to be an amazing night. And I think he is somebody that, on our list that we were talking about, we kind of thought about, we're kind of copying what the first year was, which was a legend kind of outside of the playing field for this franchise, a legend who made an impact, but maybe briefly to the Devil Rays era, and then a person who is synonymous with the team. and greatness. And so Dave Wills, I think, falls perfectly into the same thing with Zimmer, but even more of an impact, I'd say, on Tampa Bay Devil Ray and Rays baseball, because that is the voice of the Devil Rays and the Rays as much as Dwayne is.
Right. And with broadcasters, right, like Wills started, I believe, the 05 season was it when him and Fried started. And, you know, that was almost 20 years ago. And there's no player, there's no coach, there's no manager, there's no front office member, other than I think like Bill Evers, who's still like, I think he does something with the Rays. No one sticks around that long with you. Charlie Montoya did for a long time, but like with the big league club. And so like for a broadcaster to have that long lasting of an impact. And obviously I think Stats and Andy Fried are both Hall of Famers as well. And but I think the timing would make sense for Wills. But I know you've got a legend name that you think would be a great addition.
Think it's so. This is one of those ones where if they wanted to keep a similar kind of three era or kind of three kind of category thing, I think you could roll in the good time parade of Fred McGriff from he's doing his Hall of Fame kind of run now, the crime dog, kind of a Tampa Bay area legend. Even more than obviously a Devil Ray, but he was there in the inaugural season. He put up two really great years with the Devil Rays. One of the first truly great Devil Rays players. I think you could have Fred McGriff. He was a little busy this year, I think, with the whole actual Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. But I mean, I think like, why not just keep the party going for the crime dog? And this is the one we actually kind of had the most debate about. Not so much that like he probably doesn't belong there. He obviously does. But like, do you do this so early? Or do you maybe go with more of a like Rays classic? And we kind of went back and forth on it.
Yeah, I've been looking at Fred McGriff's baseball reference page throughout the episode. And I guess I knew he played, you know, several years of the Rays. I did not realize. So obviously the Braves, he had the most games played in 636. Then Toronto, 578. He played with the Devil Rays, 577. So just one less game than he did with the Blue Jays. Had 2,400 plate appearances with the Devil Rays. Had 99 home runs with the Devil Rays. And so, just because I was a little too young to experience it, I don't know if I've like ever really like properly appreciated where McGriff stands in Rays lore. He is eighth most home runs in a Devil Rays uniform with those 99. Brandon Lau just recently passed him, and to do that also, and I think this is part of Boggs too, being that local presence, I think is something that's really important. Especially as the Rays hopefully continue to grow their footprint in the Tampa Bay area. And so I have no complaints about the crime dog, who is the only other, you know, true like Devil Rays Hall of Famer in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. So I like that one. And I think there's a few other players that are definitely deserving, but maybe you're just recently retired. Maybe you give that a little bit more time. And you also want to continue to stretch this out. We don't know, like, if they do three inductees a year, they might run out of deserving inductees within, like, 5 or 6 years. So maybe they slow it down. But we're just assuming for this exercise that it's just three. So I like McGriff.
Start strong. I think you start strong. You know, maybe the first couple of years, you kind of get a bunch of, like, the classics. McGriff is such an interesting one because when the Hall of Fame debate came about, it was sort of like, which team does he go in as? And everybody immediately was like, oh, obviously this. And but there was like four answers. Like he is not a guy who I think you can like be like, absolutely, definitely this team. Like, I think growing up the era, you know, when I was a kid, it was the Braves, and that's who I'm kind of synonymous with. But if you look through, like, and you follow his career, like, his best years were in Toronto, which I don't know how much, like, it feels like most of the highlights you don't see the Toronto, but like, he was great there. He was really good in San Diego. Like, that's probably his second best, like, stretch of any team. And then he was great with the Braves. He was great with the Devil Rays. Like, that is, you know, we obviously, there was a lot of debate about how, like, Fred McGriff had a really deserving Hall of Fame case. And it took a while. Like, when you really dive in, you're like, man, this guy really deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. He was, like, a extremely good, like, he was a hit. He, like, was one of the best hitters in baseball from 1987 up until about 2002. Like, that's just remarkable. Like, absolutely remarkable. He was the model of consistency. His worst hitting season in that stretch from 1987 to 2002 was a 107 WRC plus, where he slashed 277, 373, 452 with 27 home runs. That was his worst offensive year.
Yeah.
Like, amazing. Crime dog. Absolutely. And again, local, fresh off the Hall of Fame. I think it's the right time, because I think he's getting there no matter what. Why not just be like, bam, bring back, you know, an actual, you know, Hall of Famer in the area. Absolutely.
It makes a lot of sense. And for the third one, I think we had a couple of different answers, but someone who is synonymous with the golden age of Rays baseball, that 2008 to 2010, those 3 years, and you know, past that as well, but a pitcher who is just, again, like, he is truly a Rays pitcher. There's a couple other guys that have had some success with other teams. But James Shields, Big Game James, for I believe you brought his name up first, but I was in full agreement. Again, there are some other names that maybe, I don't know, like, but for next year, I think it's time for Big Game James.
This is a tough one for that third one. I think the biggest other debate was Bossman Jr., BJ Upton. And it was great to see BJ at the Trop for Crawford's induction. So I think for me, Bossman Jr. is 2 years from now. Like, that's the next class. He can't wait any more than that. But yeah, I think James Shields, I want him in that next class. From 2006 to 2012, when he was with the Devil Rays and the Rays, which is kind of again fitting to the transitional period, like Carl Crawford, who he pitched well, he played well as a Devil Ray, and then got to see success with the franchise, like Carl Crawford. He had a 3.89 ERA, a 3.84 FIP through 1,454 innings. Just absolute workhorse. The complete games, the 11 complete games in the 2011 season was just remarkable. 33 starts, and one third of them, he went the entire distance. Like, absolutely. One of my absolute favorite pitchers of all time. His changeup was electric. Just a spectacular pitcher. And it was really cool to see him throughout the first pitch this year. And he's one of those guys where he's, you know, retired not too long ago, but he's still active with philanthropic work in the area. He's you know, still looks good. You know, could maybe, you know, get him as those pitchers were going down for the Rays, you know, you maybe like give him a little bit of a workout and see if he can get like two innings, do the Erasmo type of deal. But no, I think Big Game James coming in next year would love to see that.
Yeah, and again, there's obviously no slight to like the BJ Uptons of the world, Ben Zobrist, Carlos Pena, Kevin Kiermaier eventually after his playing days are done, David Price now that he's officially retired,
the crowning jewel of Evan Longoria.
Evan Longoria, of course.
But yeah, it's tough. You can't, you know, Price just is retiring. Longoria still playing. Kiermaier still, you know, in a playoff hunt. You know, like he's still like a key contributor in that. So yeah, those guys, you know, like eventually they're there. But
and I think the Rays have a like for like the off the field, the non-player side, they've got enough people that are probably deserving. You look at like a Joe Maddon eventually. We talked about Dwayne Statt and Andy Fried. Vince Namoli might be another posthumous induction. There are a number of people. Andrew Friedman at some point. I don't know when that would be. And then, yeah, I think they definitely still have a solid list of players. But, yeah, I think, like, Shields is just one of those where I think he's talked so openly about how much he loved his time with the Rays, and all those guys have. But man, I'm all for like just more 2008 reunions. I was there for one of the 2008 reunions a couple years ago, for the like 10th anniversary season of that, and or the 20th anniversary season for the team. And so I'm all for like seeing more of those guys at the ballpark. I know Jason Bartlett's been like hanging around. He lives in the area. When I was there, like Akinori Iwamura came back. Just like more excuses for me to see those guys, because that is still, yeah. I think, my favorite Rays team of all time. But yeah, the Hall of Fame, I'm very glad that the Rays decided to introduce it this year, something that I thought they needed for a long time. The other thing that you and I mentioned off air is, and hopefully, you know, we'll get something with the new stadium, is like a true Rays museum at the ballpark. Because there are a lot of other players involved in a lot of other great moments that maybe aren't Hall of Fame worthy. Dan Johnson being, I think, the best example of that. And there are people out there that think he should be in the Hall of Fame, and I'll let you have that opinion. But to honor that moment, like I think they've tried to do it with 162 landing. I don't know. The trap just, I don't know if it really lends itself for like those types of museums. They've always had the Hitters Hall of Fame at the trap, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you can like dedicate in the plans for the new stadium, a section that you can truly honor, like, and it's not just like retiring numbers, it's like having the in Seattle at T-Mobile Park, there's a great little kind of Mariners Hall of Fame little boardwalk with a little bar that's like the shortest beer lines in the stadium. So hot tip for everybody. But you go down that way. It's really cool because you do have these full glossy panel about, you know, each player. And then there's like a TV showing highlights about that player and some memorabilia from that. So you have like Randy Johnson and Ken Griffey Jr. But then you also have like, you know, Jay Buhner and Dan Wilson and Freddie Garcia and like, you know, guys that are really impactful and important members of this team that's not necessarily just like only legends, but like people that matter to that team and to fans of that team. And so I think that's something that the Rays, as they build this out, I think that's something they can absolutely do, and they should. And I think starting to celebrate their Tampa and St. Pete-ness and to celebrate their history. This is a team that, you know, the first 10 years, not successful winning, but like there was some pretty awesome moments and some great players. But there's been a serious, like from 2008 on, there are very few franchises that can claim this consistent level of success. Like regular season into postseason appearances to star players that like actually left an impact. So, and really entertained fans. So I think it's something worthy of celebrating. I'm glad they're embracing it now.
Yeah. And that's where you can honor, like we said, the Dan Johnsons, the Brett Phillips, Sam Fold, right? Like these true, yes. like truly yes. Rays heroes, that maybe, you know, you wouldn't give, you know, a true Hall of Fame induction, but are definitely worthy of immortalization in the Rays Hall of Fame. So, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. We'll see if by the time you hear from us next, the Rays have made up any ground on Baltimore in the AL East race. Darby, thank you again, as always. And if you enjoy what we do, make sure to subscribe or follow on your preferred podcast platform so that every new episode of Raise Your Voice is downloaded directly to your device. As always, make sure to head on over to draysbay.com to check out all of that great Rays coverage. Once again, thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.